When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast where we discuss the famous and infamous runs and story arcs throughout the history of comics. I'm Paul Matthew Carr, and with me, as always, is Brian Reese.
I'm here!
You are here!
I can see you.
No, you can't.
Oh, right. No, I can't.
But today on the program, we'll be discussing the 1991 crossover event, The Infinity Gauntlet, written by Jim Starlin, with art by George Perez and Ron Lim. This, of course, is a blatant ploy on my part to tie into the upcoming release of the Avengers Infinity War that will draw heavily from this story.
Shameless.
Well, by all accounts, it will draw heavily from this story. I haven't actually seen it, as it hasn't actually been released yet. But before we do that, there are a couple of things happening in the world of comics that we'd like to talk about, one of which being Amazon is reportedly developing an adaptation of Jonathan Hickman's comics, East of West and Transhuman, both of which will be produced by Robert Kirkman of Walking Dead fame. And what do you think of that, Brian?
Well, I think that I'm just all a Twitter, aren't I?
No, it's not on Twitter. It's on Amazon.
Well, you know, eventually Twitter will soon, you'll get movies in 140 some god, however many characters.
Yeah, all the dialogue has to be in 140 characters.
Yeah, didn't Twitter just up their character count?
If you get some kind of special authorization to do so. So if you're famous, you can.
So we're in.
Eventually.
Yes. I think it's intriguing. Sure. I mean, why not? I hope that Kirkman doesn't give it the Walking Dead Kirkman treatment.
Well, he's not really involved in the Walking Dead show, is he?
I think he is.
But not on a showrunner kind of basis, is he?
I think they have to clear. Don't they have to clear stuff through him?
I don't know.
I think they do. I think he has to, like, I don't know. I don't have the contract in front of me. But, you know, he's always on those, like, Talking Dead shows and, you know, always, you know, showing up. And
I guess it
is
his
giving his 2 cents worth, which it is his creation. So
yes.
I guess you're allowed to, like, offer one's opinion on your own creation.
Yes, I agree. And of course, we all know when he goes to the seaside, what his favorite thing is. Coral.
Oh.
But anyway, I'm
Coral. Coral's dead.
Yeah. Oh, don't do that. That's like spoilers, man.
Oh, that's spoilers from what, 8 weeks ago?
There will be people. I'm gonna censor that. Or I'm gonna say send all complaints to Brian Reese.
www.atbrianreese.com.
www.brianreese.com.
I encourage people to send complaints to that address that we have just.
Don't. It'll be annoying some guy who doesn't deserve
it. Poor schlub out there is like going to start getting.
Well, I'm actually excited about East of West. This has so much potential cinematically, if done well, that is.
If done well. I mean, Amazon certainly has the money to do it.
Well, $1 billion for Lord of the Rings. I wonder what they're throwing at this one.
Yeah, well, you know, and... The parallel is that in East of West, you have a lot of walking.
Yeah, it's true. Well, just the color scheme alone would be, you know, unique and beautiful.
I would be curious how they pull that off. I mean, in a real way, not just like filters. Don't just throw filters on the camera.
Yeah, because all the characters have different colors, you know, involved with them.
And, yeah, but don't just paint them colors. I don't know. It could be... We're getting into the deep end already here. I will be very curious to see how they pull it off. I think it could work. It could definitely work. I mean, there's some elements to it that might be tricky, but I'm not necessarily super fussy about adaptations, changing things around to fit a different medium. So yeah.
You're a fan of The Preacher.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Now, see, on a similar, that's a similar note, would be I like American Gods.
Right.
Which strays from the material from time to time, but I like what they've done with it so far. It's fun to watch. So, yeah. You know, if something akin to that with East of West, that would be cool. I will admit I'm not that familiar with Transhuman, which is why I'm
I think Transhuman is actually, that's one of my favorite Jonathan Hickman pieces. Oh, so okay. I'm almost more excited about Transhuman. East of West is a better, you know, comic, and it's a longer running comic. And, you know, Transhuman was 4 issues and done. But it's one of those Hickman series, you know, that he does that he kind of gets in, says what he has to say, raises a lot of questions, and gets out.
Yeah.
And I think he does that very well, which is not a negative towards his longer works, which I also very much enjoy too. But, you know, I'd love to see Nightly News as a series. But
well
that would actually be the easiest to do.
Well, East of West has that, has a really deep and vast mythology surrounding it. You know, if you want to have an ongoing series, that's something you can delve into.
Right, which I assume Transhuman is just going to be a mini series.
You'd be surprised what they
I would be surprised. I'm surprised by many things. I was surprised that the Sci-Fi Network stretched Happy out into 8 or 9 episodes.
Yeah.
But they did.
I still haven't seen that.
Yeah. It's worth watching.
Okay.
It's not for the kids, though.
No.
Not for the kids.
If it's anything, you know, if it's in any way based on the material. Or
it's nastier.
Or depicts what's on the material.
Yeah. The show is actually nastier than the original material.
Wow.
In a good way. I'm fine with it.
Oh, good. So, I'm actually kind of excited. Just in general, there's so much comic book material that's now, you know, being adapted. And I know that's a big rush because it's, you know, it's sort of the thing right now.
Well, and one of my favorite ongoing series right now, Deadly Class by Rick Remender, has just been optioned. Well, it's not just been optioned. I think it was already optioned. And I think they just gave an order for like a season after filming a pilot of Deadly Class.
Huh.
And I forget which network it is. It's probably HBO or FX or Amazon, one of those. And I'm excited about that too, partly because it'd be nice to see Rick Remender get paid. And it's a great comic, and I think it really would lend itself well to being serialized in a film or television format.
Yeah, no, I just like that there's such an abundance, and there could be a few clunkers here and there, but I love having so much to choose from. It's a golden age of comic books. Comic book adaptations.
Which could, it's a golden age of, it's a golden age of options being taken on series. We'll see how many of them actually get to development, and we'll see if we don't get a burnout at some point too.
Well, yeah, we're going to have a burnout at some point, but I'd love, you know, if East of West turns into something great, cool.
Yeah.
You know? And if the price we have to pay is Rob Liefeld's stuff, hey, it's the price we got to pay.
It is. Poor Rob Liefeld. He's not hurting anybody.
No.
He just likes pouches and feet.
He hates feet. Hates yeah. feet, loves pouches.
He should just draw feet as pouches.
Speaking of which.
How did we get to Rob Liefeld?
I don't know. But let's rein it in.
All right.
Okay. So another bit of news, it's more of an unconfirmed rumor at this point, is that Grant Morrison will be taking over as the writer for Green Lantern. Now, Brian, I know you're excited about this. You're the one who brought this to my attention, actually.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, it's technically a rumor, but apparently it's one that, so we'll treat it as a rumor and we'll talk about it as if it happens.
Yeah, well, the rumor is pretty detailed. I mean, they're already announcing or rumoring
that possibly Liam Sharp as the artist, yeah. Which would be amazing.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, basically a comic whose premise is that emotion and thought can be willed into existence using multicolored rings seems like something Morrison might be able to do something with.
I think he's going to have a field day with it. If he sticks with it, as long as he doesn't pull an Action Comics when he wrote like what seven for New 52, he wrote like seven issues and then that never really went anywhere or did anything and kind of
Well, you know, he had Superman in jeans. That was neat.
Which solves the underwear on the outside of your tights problem.
I think he still should have done that. Had the underwear and jeans over top of his jeans.
The tights outside of the jeans. And of course, the red, right? So you're in the color spectrum, which brings us back to Green Lantern.
Boom.
I wonder if this comes to pass. It's a wonderful opportunity for him if he keeps it out in space. Now, what is interesting is that Green Lantern has existed primarily out in space, and we don't know which Green Lantern he's going to use because I think there's, what, now 30 or 40 of the Green Lanterns are from Earth?
Yeah. there's quite a bit.
Yeah. No other planet gets more than one, and most of them don't get any.
Yeah.
But Earth gets 50.
Well, which Green Lantern did he write for in his Justice League? Was that Guy Gardner?
I think it was Guy Gardner. Yeah, it was Guy Gardner. Well, no. Kyle Rayner was in
Kyle
there.
Kyle Rayner. It was, Kyle,
it was
Rayner.
Kyle Rayner.
So maybe he'll bring Kyle Rayner back.
Who knows? Yeah. But whichever one he does.
I'd love to see Jon Stewart back.
It would be good to see Jon Stewart.
From The Daily Show, Jon Stewart.
Yes, Jon Stewart. Yeah.
Satirical news and Green Lantering. That's actually what you call it, Green Lantering.
Oh, jeez.
So anyway.
I wonder if Green Lantern would allow him to expand on his multiversity concepts a little bit more than I think other writers. It seems weird that Multiversity came out. It was this great sort of series, you know, it was a limited series where, mm-hmm. you know, he was laying out the 52 plus Earths and all of the sort of the great map that existed. And it seemed like he like threw out all these great ideas for other writers to pick up on, and very few of them, if any, did.
Well, it seems to me that DC keeps trying to rein in all those other universes. They always try to condense it into a smaller package, and then Morrison comes along and blows it up.
and because he's Grant Morrison, they're like, well, yeah, go ahead, but we may not use it.
Yeah. We're going to take the next couple of years, reining it all back in again for you to come in and blow it back up again.
Yeah. Which, who knows if he will? I don't, you know, we don't even know for certain that this is going to happen.
Nah, it probably will happen.
It seems like it probably will happen, yeah. But just setting Grant Morrison loose in the Green Lantern world is kind of exciting and seems like it could be a lot of fun. It will be curious to see if it's like the, I'm going to throw everything at the wall and just have fun Grant Morrison, or the, I'm going to go deep philosophy, deep thoughts Grant Morrison, and we'll see which one it is. It seems like Green Lantern would lend to Grant Morrison's Silver Age fetish.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Unless he goes like, you know, Guy Gardner worships a snake, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm.
Sure. Which
becomes a magician.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, of course not. But in addition to not just Grant Morrison rumored to be writing Green Lantern, there's also Brian Azzarello is rumored to be writing a new Suicide Squad. And Kelly DeConnick on Aquaman. Both of which are very interesting. We talked about this before, Brian. I'm a little bit upset to see Dan Abnett go on Aquaman because it's been really good. Been really enjoying it. But all things must change, I guess.
Well, and I think Kelly DeConnick on Aquaman is an intriguing choice. If, again, this is a real thing. It's just a really strange choice for her to write, which I maybe is exactly what we want. I like her writing. She is very polarizing to readers, and I get why some readers don't appreciate her, but I really like her writing. I like her stuff. I like where she goes in her writing. I think it's challenging and interesting. Pretty Deadly is one of the great comics of the last several years that I always look forward to when it sporadically comes out. So, and Bitch Planet as well. So I think that's a kind of exciting news too. And it'll be interesting to see what she does playing in the Marvel or in the DC sandbox.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be very, very interesting, especially, I mean, I don't know if you've been following Aquaman, the ongoing that's happening right now. It's a really interesting premise that they have going on now. And I'm curious, would she start over or would she, you know, continue to develop the ideas that Abnett's been going with?
It's hard to tell. Yeah. You know, she definitely has her own unique take on things. And some of that goes back to, we get into the weird continuity versus the writer's voice type of thing. Yeah. I'm not as much of a continuity hawk as other folks are. And, you know, I like to see writers kind of freed up to tell their own stories without being burdened down by too much continuity. Yeah. I also get that people get upset if it goes wildly out of, you know, the sphere of what, of the character. But, and we don't even know if she's actually, if this is real or not. We know that her take on Wonder Woman for, Bendis's Black Label. We're not sure if it's even going to be called Black Label, but whatever the sort of adult-oriented label that Brian Bendis is going to be overseeing, she's doing Wonder Woman with, I think is very interesting. I think these are just like one-shot, like graphic novel type titles that are going to be done as opposed to ongoing series, but these are supposed to be out of continuity, I think. So that's already, I believe, been confirmed that she's doing a Wonder Woman for one of those, which is a great pairing.
Now, I'm kind of like you. I typically don't mind when a new writer comes on and there's been and continuity shifts and a new story's told. Typically, I don't mind that. But if there's an ongoing story that I'm really enjoying and then suddenly it changes back to a number one Marvel, that bugs me. but you know, I'm always just excited to see, you know, what new talent does with an old property. So overall, I think this is a good thing. DC just continuing to kill it, man.
Well, so far, you know, give them enough rope though. It is DC after all. While I love DC dearly, give them enough rope and they'll find a way to screw it up. So, you know, fingers crossed.
Wow. This is really a different attitude for both of us, because usually I'm not anti-DC, but down on DC. And I'm really excited about all the stuff they're announcing and the stuff that they're publishing. It just, DC's just great right now.
Oh, I'm excited about a lot of it. I just, you know, I have enough history with DC to know that one must always temper their excitement with the fear of the inevitable.
I guess that's true. Okay, and now...
Don't screw this up, Detective Comics.
So, Fear of the Inevitable. I guess that's a good enough segue to take a quick break and come back with Infinity Gauntlet.
Sounds like a plan, Paul.
All right, be right back.
Hello, everyone. I'm Al Sedano, host of Resurrections and Adam Warlock and Thanos Podcast. Over the last few years, this show has covered Adam's life. From his early appearances in Fantastic Four and Thor, to his run as Space Jesus on Counter-Earth. Now, we have made it midway through the 1970s and Jim Starlin's iconic run on the character. The Magus, Gamora, Pip the Troll, and Adam finally meeting Thanos. Speaking of Thanos, we haven't forgotten about him. We will soon be starting our coverage of Starlin's hardcover graphic novel, The Infinity Relativity, starring Thanos. So join me, along with my regular co-hosts, John Wilson and Brian Zeno, as well as others, on Resurrections and Adam Warlock and Thanos Podcast. Found on iTunes, Stitcher, and Podbean. ResurrectionsAdamWarlock.tumblr.com.
And we're back. It's hard to believe, but once upon a time in the Marvel Universe, crossovers were a rare and unusual thing.
What?
After the Infinity Gauntlet, that would change. Jim Starlin created Thanos in the early 70s as a, let's go with homage, to Jack Kirby's Darkseid. But through his runs on Captain Marvel and Adam Warlock, Starlin developed Thanos into a multi-dimensional character bordering on being an anti-hero, as well as developing the cosmic side of the Marvel Universe into a deeper and vast entity in and of itself. When Starlin left Marvel for a brief time, Thanos and his other creations laid fallow till his return for a run on Silver Surfer, where he devised a one-time cosmic crossover event featuring Thanos that turned into four, a prequel and two sequels. But the Infinity Gauntlet was the 1991 main event, a six-issue limited series that was written by Starlin and drawn at first by George Perez, but finished by Ron Lim. It revolves around Thanos' attempt to win the affections of Mistress Death, the literal personification of death in the Marvel Universe. Thanos has collected all of the Infinity Gems, mind, soul, space, power, time, and reality, which combined give him godlike power. His machinations to impress Death, however, fall short, as no matter what he does, she continues to shun him. Because of this, his behavior becomes more and more erratic, and his attempts to woo her more extreme, including killing half the population of the universe with the snap of his fingers. Meanwhile on Earth, the remaining heroes, led by a resurrected Adam Warlock, conspire with the great powers of the universe to defeat Thanos with terrible and sometimes tragic results. But through all the wild schemes, desperate plans, and individual heroics, it is the frailty of Thanos' ego that finally brings him down in the end. The Infinity Gauntlet is a sweeping, complex cosmic drama with philosophical overtones that continues to be referenced and influential in stories right up till today. And for good or ill, it set the stage for company crossovers for decades to come. Brian, what'd you think of the Infinity Gauntlet?
Well, I mean, it's big, it's ambitious, it's a hell of a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun, but in a way that a lot of subsequent crossovers and major events that will change the Marvel Universe forever until the next major event have become tedious. A lot of those have become tedious, whereas I think this was one of the last gasps of the big gigantic event / crossover event that still retained a level of fun.
Yes. And
and it was fun. I had a hoot reading it again. It was very entertaining to me.
Yeah, I like this one too. It's very Jim Starlin. I mean, he has that sort of, you know, go big or go home mentality.
Right.
And it's just so much in this. It the visuals sometimes overtake the story. And that's not
at least for the first three or four issues.
Yeah. And that's not a bad thing because the visuals are pretty good.
Yeah. But that's something we could talk about down the line in this discussion.
Yeah. Overall, there are some 90s little touches in there that just with appearances, like Doctor Strange's mustache, for instance.
We love the Doctor Strange mustache, but this, yeah, it was.
Yeah, that was 70s porno star, right? Crazy mustache.
Yeah. You know, Thor's outfit, of course, Thor not being really Thor. Well, Thor is Thor.
Right, but it's a different.
Thor is Thor, but it's not Donald Blake.
Right. But the full face mask, the full face mask helmet combo.
Right. Really. To disguise the fact that it's not Thor, although his dialogue is so completely not Thor that you just wonder if the rest of the heroes in the Marvel Universe are remarkably stupid.
Or they're just giving him a pass.
Or they're just like, well,
he thinks we don't know. Just play along.
He has the hammer, so we're just going to, go with it. What is it, the Hulk wearing a purple jumpsuit?
I know. I kind of liked Hulk in this, though. I mean,
Do you like the jumpsuit?
Not necessarily the jumpsuit, but I liked that he had a personality.
Right. This was the era when Banner was more in control.
Right.
You know, what time is it? And, you know, that'll change.
Yeah. This is Peter David. This is at the height of Peter David's run, correct?
I think so.
But there's some nice little character moments, like when Hulk has that heart-to-heart with Wolverine on the roof.
Right.
Yeah. You know.
We're both monsters, so eventually Adam Warlock is going to come up here and ask us to kill somebody.
I do love the fact that Surfer keeps calling out Adam Warlock. Like, do you only talk in riddles? Can you not say something directly?
And at some point you're like, you're the Silver Surfer. You know, you can just leave.
Yeah, I know.
It's, If you're that dissatisfied with the plan, you can leave. You can go do what you want to do. I mean, it's Adam Warlock is not going to be able to stop you, the Silver Surfer.
Well, yeah.
And, you know, the other thing is, even when Galactus shows up, he doesn't even give a shout out. You know, there's no like, hey, Silver Surfer, what's happening?
Yeah.
Or Fire Lord, too. You know, it's like, it's Silver Surfer and Fire Lord are there, and Galactus is just like, I don't know these two cats. I don't.
Well, Galactus has been around for a long time. You know, you lose touch and you forget.
Right. You know, I think the Silver Surfer probably maybe hadn't written. There was a birthday card missed.
No, Galactus does. He does see Earth and go, oh, there's that planet that Norrin Rad talked me out of eating.
Right. Yeah.
So he does have some memory of it. Yeah, but he's got bigger things on his mind, man.
He does. Yeah. He's a hungry guy.
This is the Marvel Cosmic Universe all coalescing. And to be honest, it's a very confusing thing.
Oh, yeah. It was not written for excessive coherence. It was written as a big thing, like a big thing in which big things happen.
Yeah. Look how cool these giant people are.
Right.
Yeah.
Nuance is not necessarily the most admired trait in a large event comic. I think when I'm reading this, unfortunately, what I did and others will do, and whether it's fair or not doesn't matter. We were still just a few years, not that long removed from Crisis on Infinite Earths. And unfortunately, every event comic, at least up to a certain point, one could even like say currently, although that's debatable and arguable, most event comics are weighed by or compared to Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yeah. Well, and then that's precisely why they brought George Perez in, because this was a big cosmic event.
And there are definitely elements that they are taking from Crisis. And I bring up Crisis because I think there was actually nuance in Crisis, whereas with this, they don't care. But, you know, the similarities to, I mean, Crisis is, you know, a huge universe spanning
Crisis had a
point. Right, with people like being mysteriously killed by a thing.
Yeah.
You know, people just disappearing into like a white, you know, the white nothingness, which of course is what was happening to people when Thanos decided to just kill half the universe.
To be fair,
there is the mysterious sort of character coming from nowhere to sort of lead and advise, in, you know, between the Pariah and Adam Warlock.
Well, Jim Starlin does, he apparently reads DC Comics.
Yes. Well, everybody read Crisis.
Yes, I know. But, you know, the big event is just sort of throw everything at the wall and look how cool these visuals are and these giant things and the cosmic universe is crazy. And we're going to have a personification for every emotion and every aspect of reality. But
it's almost like having multicolored rings.
Yes. To be fair to Starlin, he loves Thanos.
Right.
And, you know, Thanos didn't just destroy or annihilate half the population of the universe on a whim. He did it out of love, man.
He did it for love.
Did it for love. That whole idea of a nihilist being in love.
I would do anything for love, but I wouldn't do that.
I wish I had a meatloaf joke right now, but I don't. But the idea of a nihilist being in love with death, that's some pretty heavy stuff for a comic book.
Sure.
I mean, he handles it in a very almost light kind of way. But the right. But the idea behind it is pretty substantial.
Well, and there's humor behind it, too. It's and of course, as they mentioned several times, like because we didn't get it the first five times they talked about it in the series, they had to keep reminding us that Thanos always wins until one of his weaknesses is exposed. And, you know, this one is love. And he is the spurned lover, egged on by Mephisto.
You know, and that's actually a pretty good... That was pretty good, you got to admit.
Mephisto
as his advisor, but always telling him the wrong thing and trying to get him to screw up.
That's right.
That's pretty good.
But not for the sake of humanity, but for the sake of he just wanted... Now, are we currently calling them... Are they the Infinity Gems, or are they now the Infinity Stones?
They're stones in the movies. gems on the page.
Okay. Are they still, because I'm not keeping up in the Marvel Universe with all of this. So
in the Marvel Universe, it's Infinity Stones.
So they did change it to stones.
Yes.
Because the Inhumans, right?
It has something to do with copyright and yeah. garbage like that. I don't know the actual reason, but it has to do with real world movie events or movie rights. You know, they got stones.
They got stones. It's a real gem.
You're beating me to the puns, man.
I know. You're welcome.
To keep in mind with everybody just wants the glove. Everybody right. just wants to get their hand in the glove. But my favorite is Doom. I love the fact that Dr. Doom, even with the existence of the universe at stake, he still thinks, you know, I should really be the one that's in charge.
The ego run rampant. But it's interesting. That's even weird. And the Dr. Doom thing and the Mephisto thing and even the Thanos thing later, it falls on these tropes that kind of drive me nuts. So it starts off with Dr. Doom, and he first of all, like the first scene with him, he's bitching about, you know, this is being done to his people, so he must act. So when they first present him in his thought bubbles, he's actually acting altruistically, if not for the universe, but for his subjects. And then, of course, later it's just like, oh no, he's just a big douche who wants the thing for himself.
Yeah, but
and Mephisto, same thing. It's like, oh, is Mephisto actually trying to defend humanity because maybe Mephisto's power isn't worth quite as much with half of humanity or more gone? But well, then,
to be fair, the devil's always been a douche,
so, right? You know. The devil has always been a douche.
But Doom, yeah, you think he's acting altruistically, but he's just worried about, yo, you're touching my stuff.
Right.
This is my stuff. Touch my stuff.
But part that's of me, why he's you know, doing it. Yeah, but then there's the part of me that's just sort of like, it's to me, it's kind of a generic, you know, sort of idea that bad guys are always going to act like bad guys. And so the pretense of them being noble for whatever reason, when you're reading it, when I was reading this, I was like, oh no, they're just going to revert to form. They're going to revert to cliche. And then they reverted to cliche. And I was like, wouldn't it be more interesting if Doom or Mephisto actually was acting heroically in a manner with which, you know, I'm a bad guy, but these bad guys are worse than me as a bad guy. And, you know, I may want to subjugate the earth, but I want everybody on earth to be around for me to subjugate.
Yes. And I agree with you. That is a better story. We are talking about early 90s.
Right.
And that kind of subtlety is going to take a decade before it starts, you know, to weave its way into stories.
But even by that point, like someone like the Kingpin had been shown to have some humanity within him.
Yeah. But, you know, we see Thanos sort of semi-redeemed at the end of the story.
Yeah, that was weird.
Okay.
But, I love the fact that when Thanos loses the gauntlet, to Nebula, and then they're just like, oh well, come join our team, Thanos. So the man who just committed like the genocide? Murder of trillions or unknown amount of humans unknown amount of living creatures throughout the universe, he loses the gauntlet. They're like, oh hey, well, you know, let's let bygones be bygones, and you know, come help us out, bro. He's like, well, okay. Yeah. This is why I love comics too, because it's nuts. It's a little kooky, but that's kind of what we like as well. Yeah. So I'm saying this, but I'm not saying this as a negative. I'm saying this as like, this is one of the absurd things that you're going to get when you have a story about, you know, a mad titan destroying half the universe.
And I mean, there is a lot of history that goes back with Thanos and Adam Warlock that plays into that whole thing. But you're not presented with any of that history in this comic. You're just expected to know it or get over it, basically.
Well, and I think the assumption at the time was that you could keep up a little better. Like if you were a Marvel zombie, you were probably reading a lot of the Marvel titles, or at least a lot of the major Marvel titles. It was easier to keep up. Marvel wasn't releasing 500 different titles a month. And
300 of them are X-Men.
300 of them are X-Men. I think it was easier to keep up with what was happening in the universe. It's very difficult now. Even I, as a DC person, it's difficult for me to keep up with what DC is doing in every title. It's difficult for me to keep up with Marvel, what they're doing in every title. Mm-hmm. But I think it was easier back then. So I think there was an assumption that a lot of the readers coming into this were probably Marvel zombies in many ways. And I don't use that as a negative.
Yeah, it's not pejorative.
I just mean it as people who preferred Marvel. So I think there would be like an assumption that you were going to know what was happening.
Right. And this is spectacle over substance, really.
Sure.
This is really just a big, fanciful, colorful, crazy battle.
And it was another way, I always appreciate these, it's another way to throw like a whole bunch of heroes up against something and then kill a bunch of them without consequence.
Yes, everything does get
unearned. I mean that as a positive, because of course there's a big giant reset. We're not really giving anything away. Of course there was a reset.
Well, I do like the fact that, let's get rid of all the people we really don't want.
Right, like right off the get-go, more than half of the Marvel heroes were taken off the board, just written off as, they disappeared.
Yep. Should we have Hawkeye in this? No, let's get rid of Hawkeye. Much like the movie, I think, is doing.
I wouldn't know.
Hawkeye has not been in any of the advertising posters or trailers, anything.
Oh, well, maybe that just means they're setting him up for a surprise.
Yeah, he's going to be the savior.
Hawkeye will be the savior. You get the guy without powers to be the savior.
I actually think that's a pretty good idea, but that's a different story.
Yeah. But one of the best things about killing off all these characters is the Iron Man bits. Did you catch this? like Iron Man gets his head ripped off, and it's not his helmet. It's his head in his helmet. And there's all these little scenes of his helmet, like people, it's like rolling around. And that's his head inside there. And there's scenes where it's just in the background, there's just his helmet laying there.
Yeah.
Which I think the artist, I think it was Ron Lim by this point who was doing it. It might have still been by Perez.
I think it was Lim at this point.
I think somebody was having a little bit of fun with that because it's kind of hilarious. So you have to be paying attention, but it's like Iron Man's head takes on like a life of its own.
Yeah, Iron Man had very little to do in this comic book other than show up and go, I think you're right. There are some nice little nice little touches. Like Warlock kept calling it a game. We're at a game.
And then
when Thanos builds that shrine for death, it's set up like a game board.
Yes.
And so that's, it's not set out, I'm creating a game board for which to play the game. It's just, it's all done through the visuals. And I thought that was quite clever.
Show, don't tell.
Yes. We're still in an era where everyone has to tell you what they're doing at the time.
Yeah, which that's fine. It's one of the silly things about comics that we can hate and like at the same time.
Yes.
Is the sort of over, nobody could ever talk as much as they do when they're fighting.
I have the power of a spider. Therefore, I'm going to use my spider powers at this time to fight this battle. speaking of Spider-Man, I just love this one panel when Thanos is gloating about all the things he does, and then suddenly there's just a web in his face.
Poor Peter Parker, he's like, I got nothing else.
But it's just so funny. He's like, this is what I can do.
And then, again, keeping with the people just getting randomly, massacred in horrible ways, it's, Spider-Man's tells, I forget now, but he's like, I'll take care of this one person,
It's the lady
Galactus' girlfriend,
first of all, it's very funny that Thanos tries to make Death jealous, so he creates a female copy of himself.
Yes.
Perfect, exactly what I want. What a teenage boy thing to do.
But then he's like joking. But then Spider-Man is joking around saying, I'm going to take care of her, I think.
Yeah.
And he's like, ha, ha, ha. And then the next panel, you see her beating literally like his head in.
Yes.
It's like, whoa. And then he's dead.
Yeah. Well, they all die. They all do die.
Right. Yes.
The way Thanos kills Wolverine was kind of horrific.
Oh yeah,
turns all his adamantium into rubber, and that image of him just all curled up and
it's quite there's a lot horrific. of like some of the violence in this and some of the ways that the heroes die is quite horrific. It's quite, some of it's disturbing if you think too much about it, if you're not like, oh, I'm just reading a comic, you know, and this is just a big giant fun event.
Right, right.
And you actually think about what they're doing to these people. It's like, well, that's a really awful way to go.
Well, it turns Thor into glass and then shatters him. Yeah, I mean, yeah, some of them are just, yeah, horrific is the word I keep coming up with.
But what was it? Namor and who was he? Now I forgot, you know, being covered in that weird moss.
Yeah, it was She-Hulk.
She-Hulk, yeah, Namor and She-Hulk being covered in that weird moss and turning into, I don't know, turning into bushes or something.
I did, at one point, Silver Surfer and Adam Warlock go back to the main headquarters, and Doctor Strange says, how goes the struggle?
How's it going, guys?
How's it going? And then you go, poorly.
And I love Doctor Strange, you know, as another one of my favorite characters. And it's amazing. He's one of the last ones standing. And, you know, at that time, I mean, he was not a primary character in the Marvel Universe.
Yes, but you can tell that the characters that Jim Starlin really likes.
Right.
Because at the end, it's Adam Warlock and Silver Surfer and Doctor Strange, all the big cosmic people.
Right. Or the magic guy.
The magic.
I think there's a lot of fun in the comic. There's a lot of sometimes disturbing things. I think, so for the most part, I really, you know, I vastly enjoyed it. But we have to talk about the art shift.
Yes, we do. And yeah, so if people don't know, it started out with George Perez doing the art. And he left after three issues.
The fourth issue is credited to him and Ron Lim. And when you read it, you can spot the difference from panel to panel. You know, you could spot the difference where one leaves and the other starts. Mm-hmm.
This apparently was not, you know, there was no hard feelings or anything like that. From what I've read is that Perez at the time was also doing some work for DC, a big crossover. It was the Wonder Woman crossover event.
Right.
And it was just taking, he couldn't do both at the same time, and he was starting to fall behind. So Ron Lim took over with his blessing, let's say. Sure. So there wasn't, you know, there was a battle back, you know, behind the scenes and he got kicked off the book. That's not what happened.
Right. But it's right. Still, it's jarring. And, you know, yeah. Less Ron Lim, you know, he was given a difficult task, I'm certain.
But Lim's not bad. I mean, it's not like,
He's not George Perez.
No. Yeah, but jeez, you know, that's pretty tough criticism. You're not one of the best of all time. So,
but I think it was one of those moments where, you know, we have seen this since then as very common, where you have an event comic or something and it is advertised as a particular writer and a particular artist. And the artist is usually a superstar artist that's put on, fill in whichever event comic is happening at any given time. Yeah. Because that's part of the draw is like, you know, we get the best artists, you know, we have the best artists. Our artists are the best artists. And right. Invariably said artists can never finish the series. And there, you know, you have all these, you have to always get fill-in artists to like either assist with finishing. So you get like the last three or four issues of any event where the art gets real strange.
Yeah.
And things get a little disjointed. And I think that I'm sure it's happened before Infinity Gauntlet, but it really, Infinity Gauntlet is the first time that I can remember off the top of my head, where you had such a notable shift in art mid-series.
Yeah, I mean, and it is different. The only thing I could say that Lim does better than Perez is Doctor Strange's mustache gets a little bit thinner and nicer. So a little trim during the
battle. We cleaned up the mustache.
Yeah, you cleaned up the mustache. Yes, it would have been nice to see Perez do the whole series. But Lim did, you know, did admirable work towards the end.
He was called upon in a time of need.
Yeah. There is one thing I've read, though, that
and he served his country.
That when Perez came on, or he agreed to do this, he told Starlin to add more characters because he was coming back to Marvel and he quote, wanted to knock fans' socks off with just all the different characters he could do. And then when Ron Lim came in, he said, could we not have as many characters? This is, we need to kill some people off.
Well, it was probably, he was probably working under a tighter deadline too.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But overall, I think the art's very good. Obviously better in the first few issues than it is in the last, but the last issues are still pretty good. There's a few bits in the final battle where it's just a big bright light and some captions.
Right.
And that happens fairly, you know, consistently. It's like, well, that's a bit of a cop-out.
Well, of course, they were trying to convey major things happening, but we just didn't get to see what the major thing happening was. We were just told about it on the next panel.
Yes, which is fine in a novel, but when you're reading a comic, you really want to see that. Here's cosmic entities fighting each other in a massive battle. And let me tell you, it was great.
You should have been there. Yeah, I think that was one of the most disappointing things, was that we didn't get that it was just, you know, and then we get some narrative from exposition from Adam Warlock as to, yeah, so that happened.
Yeah, or it cuts to the Watcher watching.
Yeah.
No, let's turn that camera angle around. Let's see what you're seeing, Mr. Watcher. And is there a more useless character in the Marvel Universe than the Watcher?
Well, the problem with the Watcher is, you know, he sits there and he's like, oh, I can't interfere. Except he does once in a while. Not in this series, but he has interfered in things that were less dire.
Yeah, he interferes all the time.
Yeah. But it's mostly
little things, like he'll get you a sandwich every now and again.
Sure, you know, and you know, he gave us all the what ifs, which, you know, we're always appreciative of the Watcher for all the great what if scenarios that he has brought us. Isn't he dead? Didn't he die? I think they killed the Watcher. What secret, something that Jason Aaron, some event that Jason Aaron wrote.
Yeah, it was the original.
What was
it? It was Original
Sin. Yeah, Original Sin, yeah. Is he, so you're paying more attention to, like, the broader Marvel Universe than I am these days. Is he still dead?
Sure. I actually don't know.
Is Nick Fury still the Watcher?
No, Nick Fury is not the Watcher anymore.
Okay.
But the Watcher, bless him.
His whole job is just to sit around. You know, he's, talk about being a dick. I mean, you know, the Watcher's kind of a dick.
Hey, you know, universe is going to end. Yeah, but I can't really do anything. Remember that time you did something? That was different.
Didn't you interfere with the cosmic cube somewhere before this? What's you know?
I enjoy this story quite a bit for the absolute insanity of it.
Right, and I agree. Like I said at the beginning, it was a lot of fun to read again and to go back, and it's a type of comics that I don't read as much anymore. Like in terms of new stuff, but it certainly reminds me of why I fell in love with comics in the first place. That sort of big, crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. There's just so many. There's so many. So, like, at one point, Surfer and Warlock have to run away. Why? Because there's an interdimensional distortion cascade.
Well, of course.
Yeah, you gotta outrun that. Do you want to try to explain what that is? No.
It doesn't matter. All you need to know is that you don't want to be caught in it.
That's right. And this story did need more Pip the Troll, though.
Oh, yeah. They spent a lot of time bringing him in.
So that he could find a TV and some beer.
And a cigar before they weren't allowed to smoke in the Marvel Universe. All this effort to introduce him and Gamora, and then... Yeah. She completely disappears until one of the last panels of the comic.
That was great too. She comes walking out of the bathroom and Pip the Troll just says, oh, you're back. Boss must be winning. Really? That's your job?
Well, didn't Iron Man drops her off?
Yeah.
Thanks for the ride, Iron Man. We have no idea how that happened. Now, so probably this had to do with like some of the other comics which we did not read for our...
Yeah, there were some crossovers. You know, side stories that are not collected in the trade. So we were trying to stay just with the trade and not do any of the crossovers. Yeah. So some of that stuff is sort of explained, but not really, because this was an era when people didn't really, or writers or creators weren't really into the whole crossover thing.
Right.
And they were able to say, I don't know who was writing X-Men at the time, basically said, you can have Wolverine and Cyclops, but don't involve anyone else because I don't want you to mess up my story, which can't be done now. Now it's mandated that you have to have everyone, you know.
Every single comic has to have a tie-in to the event. And if you don't read all 500 Marvel, I think I've covered that ground already, but
yeah.
Gee whiz.
Yeah, but so this was still tentative. Crossovers happened, but
I don't think they really
lightly touched the main lines.
And I don't think they really knew how to do it at the time. There wasn't a strong template yet. I mean, again, crossovers had happened many times before this, but in smaller scale. But I think they just didn't know how to properly tie in the same way that they now it's a science.
Yeah, and this was sort of bad science. Yeah, this was sort of the template. Like, oh, look, this is how you can do it.
Right.
And after this, there'd be two more sequels to the Infinity Saga, and there's still Infinity stuff going on right now.
I think there's a yes, and I believe Paul, there might even be a film.
Yes. Now I know you're not as crazy about this as I am, but I am beside myself with excitement about this movie. Oh, listen to that silence from you.
I'm allowing you to have your moment.
Oh, it's going to be so cool. I like it. I haven't even seen it yet.
it looks very busy.
It looks fantastic. Oh.
I sound like I'm poop, which I'm not. It does look very exciting and eventy and lots of bright colors and a lot of things are happening and you get the Wakandans doing that little woo, 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 woo thing while they're getting ready to probably go attack Thanos and then get wiped off the face of the earth.
Well, yeah.
But they're going to do it anyway because reasons.
Because they're protecting the earth, man. It's their
job.
If you know that you're just
basically going to get decimated, like basically blinked out of existence, what's the point in going through all of that?
He doesn't have all the stones yet, so they're trying to protect the ones that he doesn't have. That's the point.
Do we know that?
Yeah, he only has two. Well, as far as the, you know, and again, this is just coming from the trailers and the stuff that I've read. So he only has the two in this one. So he's gonna get more.
And then Hawkeye's just gonna shoot an arrow through his eye, and that'll be it.
No, everybody's gonna get blinked out of existence except Hawkeye.
Nice, because Thanos, Hawkeye didn't even rate.
Exactly, he's gonna say this guy with the bow and arrows. Nah.
Yeah. Maybe Hawkeye will team up with Green Arrow.
Ooh.
And then they'll both because then they can like take out both his eyes.
Well, if Thanos has all the stones in the Infinity Gauntlet, then he can
all realities, right?
He can pull two different franchises together.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, but will it be TV's Arrow? That's how they'll announce him too. Look, it's TV's Arrow.
It's TV's Green Arrow.
Look, and it's TV's Flash. Oh no, it's the movie Flash. Never mind.
Oh, we want the TV Flash.
But let's bring it back. I want to talk really quickly about the glorious Captain America moment where he stands up to Thanos, even though he knows he's going to get pummeled, but he still stands up to him and refuses to back down.
Even with his legs caught in some kind of ice thing.
I love that scene. Just Cap standing there in total defiance, knowing he's going to die, but not giving in. Plus it's a ploy. He's trying to, you know. He's trying to keep Thanos' attention. Yeah, keep Thanos' attention on himself so that Silver Surfer can come in and snatch that gauntlet.
It's your favorite character doing the thing that your favorite character is famous for.
Yeah, being good.
Yep, truth, justice in the American way. Oh wait, that's another guy.
No, I really like that scene. And I believe there's going to be a similar type of thing in the movie, at least from what I see in the trailers.
Well, you have to.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I think it's all those little scenes like that I think is part of what makes it so fun. But I do have one last question. So the entire universe is under attack, right?
Yes.
The entirety of the universe, half of the universe has been decimated. And the only ones who can save the universe are superheroes not just from Earth, but from America. Where the hell else is where is everybody else?
Well, they were destroyed by Thanos.
Are there no other super beings in the universe?
Well, they did talk about the Skrull and the Kree. When people disappeared, they immediately blamed each other and went to war. Right. So they're taken off the board. And so, you know, you're supposed to understand that either anyone else has been devastated or they've been disappeared.
The universe is a big place.
Yes, Brian. But we're talking about comics.
It's one of my favorite things in comics. It's like whenever the whole fabric of eternity is threatened, it takes Earthlings to do it.
Well, no. The fabric of eternity was there.
Himself, yes. Yeah, or itself.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
It's just what I love about Marvel and DC, because at the end of the day...
Well, it's got to be Earth, the United States, specifically New York. There are little... we talked about those little moments. I mean, initially when everybody disappears, you see Peter Parker immediately think Mary Jane.
Right.
And he rushes home, you know. And that's a great character moment for him to say, oh my God, he's lost the one thing that keeps him going. So that's cool.
Can we just say that George Perez draws Mary Jane very well?
Yes. Yes, he does.
I just wanted that on the record.
We could just say, George Perez draws, insert name here, very well.
True.
Do you want to talk about the ending real quick?
Sure.
Interested to get your take on it. So at the end, when everything's, you know, been taken care of, Nebula steals the Infinity Gauntlet from Thanos. Well, first of all, hold on, before I get into that, it is revealed that Thanos always loses because he wants to lose.
Right.
Which is an interesting little criminal nuance. The reason bad guys lose is because they really don't want to win. You know, that's a fascinating little tidbit.
It is. Well, it's the idea that if you're a hero and you're noble and you're fighting for generic good, then you have your character is stronger than that which is fighting for the generic evil.
Yeah. Well, and then
I don't have much else to add. You know, I think there's a lot of evil out there in the world that has as strong a will to accomplish what they wish to, but that doesn't really work in bright colored superhero comics the same way that it works, say, in the real world or in darker comics.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of the idea that there's a reason why evil will never win in comics is because, you know, like you said, evil doesn't have the will to win, the will to conquer. They'll, you know, it'll always fail. But that being said, Thanos loses the will, or he sets himself up for failure, you know, subconsciously. The gauntlet gets taken away from him. He gets blasted out into space. Everyone thinks he's dead, but it turns out he's on a farm. which I thought was a fascinating ending.
Well, I think he says at some point, he says, you know, I've had my chances. And I think he took to heart, right? Because he sabotages himself.
Right. And he's had three previous chances to rule the galaxy. And all three times he gets beaten pretty easily.
Right.
In the long run. And yeah, you're right.
Because of his own foibles.
He does take to heart that he's not ever going to win. So might as well just settle down on a farm and live a life.
Except for what his last panels or whatever, where he talks about waiting to see what will happen next.
This was supposed to be the last Infinity story, the last Infinity Gem story, last Thanos story. But as we all know, comics, it's not going to be the last one. In fact, there's one the very next year, I believe.
It's like believing Phoenix is really dead.
Exactly. So if you had taken this as this is the final panel we're going to see Thanos in, there's actually some redemption for him because he does help to defeat the big bad in the end.
Right.
And he settles down and says, you know what? I think I did win by getting a regular life. That's a great ending for that character. Of course, a year later, he's going to go back to being big bad again.
But it also, I think the last couple panels left it open for him to return to his ne'er-do-well ways.
That's true. And it didn't reflect too great on, nobody was really trusting Adam Warlock with the Infinity Gauntlet at the end.
No. Which I believe later on is shown that cosmic entities also had concerns, but that's a different story.
But overall, this is very much of its era. Crazy excesses of the 90s begins the crossover craze. And again, we should say there were crossovers before, but this is really where it takes off and finds new life. Summer crossovers every year.
Yeah.
For good or for ill.
Or now with Marvel, just infinite crossover. they took infinite to heart, and now Marvel is in just a constant state of crossover.
Yes. I don't know. That might be changing.
We'll see.
So they say. Just like legacy numbering, that's never going to go away. I really enjoy this kind of story. And for me, the cosmic side of Marvel has always been a particular favorite of mine. I love this stuff. Giant, crazy dressed, weird entities with really hard to define powers and a cosmology that just goes over your head.
I think it's a lot of fun, and I wish they made more comics like this. I think Metal had a little bit, DC's Metal had a little bit of that, but it kind of went to the wayside a little bit in later issues.
Yeah, it went dark, and it doesn't, you know.
Yeah.
Keep it.
But the idea that you could, like, contain it to, this was, what, 6 issues? Yeah. Now, I think they were oversized issues, but still 6 issues. And, you know, you tell the complete story, and it's big, it's bold, it's fun. And then you move on to the next big, bold, fun adventure.
Yeah, exactly. This is a very fun comic. Highly recommend it. Just for pure insanity, pure comic joy. And I look forward to seeing a movie about it in less than a week here.
There we go.
So, Brian?
Yes, Paul?
Next time on an all-new episode of the Collected Edition, what are we looking forward to?
We are going to be talking about Gail Simone's run on The Secret Six.
Yay!
Yay! Which is just sick and wrong comic that was actually published for real by DC as part of their regular line. It's a lot of fun. I haven't decided which of the... It's going to be her first run, but I haven't decided which of the issues we're going to be talking about yet. That will come, but just know it's Gail Simone's first run on The Secret Six.
Okay. I will put up on Twitter what the actual issues will be, or what the collected edition will be when we finally get that decided.
Excellent. I will know within 24 hours. I will actually know before this post.
Oh, well, maybe I'll just do an insert like right here. Hey everyone, Paul from the future. So what we're going to be doing is the 2008 Gail Simone run on Secret Six, issues 1 through 7, with art by Nicola Stevens. And now, back to the past.
Perfect.
Okay. All right. I think that's it. Thank you, everyone, for listening. As always, we'd love your feedback. So send us a line, comments@collectededitionpodcast.com. Hit us up on Twitter @collectededpod. That's collectededpod. And you can always go to our website, collectededitionpodcast.com, and leave comments on individual episodes. And if you leave us a review on iTunes, that'd be awesome because it helps us get found. Anything else to say, Brian?
No, I'm looking forward to, I enjoyed our conversation this week, Paul, and I am very much looking forward to our conversation next time around.
Me too. So until next time, everybody, keep reading comics.
And be well.
You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy Elk production. All materials used on the show are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. The show can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, as well as online at collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes. You can also send us feedback at comments@collectededitionpodcast.com or on Twitter at the Daddy Elk Productions handle @DaddyElk and use the #CollectedEdition. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.
Are you not entertained?